We are TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, once again to your daily dose of deprogramming. My name is J.D. Moore, and this is the Red Pill Report's radio broadcast for the 24th day of November. It is Monday, or as I like to call it, day one of the hostage situation. You always think it's going to happen to somebody else, don't you? You always think it's going to happen to somebody else. And then you wake up, and lo and behold, it is Monday once again. But I have high hopes for this week, ladies and gentlemen. Of course, it is Thanksgiving this week, and I hope all of you have got some plans to spend the latter part of this week with friends and family. I will be here live. I want to make sure everybody is aware that we will be on the air Thanksgiving morning. So when you are all sitting around smelling the turkeys cooking, as I will be here with Boulevard, we will be here live for the morning. We do this show every day, Monday through Friday, guys, from 10 o'clock Central until noon. We spend the first hour going over all the pertinent news of the day. And then in the second hour, we always have an awesome guest. And on Thanksgiving, we're going to have an extra half hour with our guest, Greg Morse. And I think this is a fantastic opportunity because there'll be so many people huddled around the soft glow of their computers on that day. For us to have a very stark and real conversation about the mortgage fraud and probably try and bring it into the arena of your own mortgages. I know Greg personally found more than 1,000 instances of fraud in his own mortgage. So one of the things that we'll want to talk to him about Thursday will be what those instances actually look like. Because I know that there are people at home thinking, A, this guy is full of mahukta, as my grandfather would say. Or they're saying, I wonder if I should be looking at my mortgage paperwork. So Thursday, we're going to have that discussion. And I think that the answer to that question, according to Greg and Scott Bennett's research, is an astounding yes. Probably need to be concerned about your mortgage. So we'll do that on Thanksgiving. Want to thank you guys all in advance for those of you who plan on being here with us. I want to thank all of you guys out there in general who are making this part of your daily news stop. You know, this is a wonderful thing that we're all building here together. And I got some fantastic emails over the weekend from some old friends. I want to give a quick shout out to my friend Michael in Costa Rica, our first, as far as I know, international listener. Michael, if you're down there, man, appreciate you listening. Appreciate the awesome email this weekend. Susan, if you're out in North Korea, shoot me an email. Let me know that you guys are listening because we are moving to an international platform and cannot appreciate all of you guys enough. Also can't appreciate Truth Frequency Radio enough. Would love for you guys to go and give a little bit of support financially to them with the donate button. Help keep us at the top of the heap for your alternative news and information. So excited to be part of this network. And then in the second hour today, want to mention that we will be speaking with Jamie Hanshaw. Jamie Hanshaw is probably one of the most interesting people that I've ever spoken with. Her main field of study is mind control, but with a real intent focus on pop culture, Saturday morning cartoons, the music industry, the entertainment industry coming out of Hollywood, all of those kind of things, as we see the history and the evolution of mind control now becoming very, very focused and very, very arena-centric. And so we're going to delve into the broader topic of mind control and the history of that, and then talk a little bit about how it's bled into pop culture, and talk a little bit about Beyonce and Katy Perry And I instructed her very specifically to leave Britney Spears out of this. Just kidding, guys. I'm not really a Britney Spears fan. I just, you know, thought it was funny to say. Anyway, so join us at the 11 o'clock hour when Jamie Henshaw will be here. We'll be talking to her about mind control and about her book, which is recent, her recent book, which is called Weird Stuff, which is, man, it is a neat book. Some of the pictures in this book are just absolutely out of control cool. And I'm very happy that she sent me a PDF copy the other day so I could read it, and I highly recommend it to all of you. So join us at 11 o'clock. We will be talking about mind control with Jamie Henshaw. So thank you for that. Mention that we'll be live on Thanksgiving. Wow, what a weekend in the news, you guys. I know everybody was kind of on edge thinking that maybe Ferguson would erupt. It has not happened yet. There's still kind of a waiting pattern going on in the Ferguson situation. Indications are right now that we could get some sort of decision today, although on Sunday they came out with a report in the New York Times saying that they had not come to any kind of conclusion at the meeting on Friday. They were talking about the potentiality of the jury reconvening today, but they hadn't actually put any plans forth or listed any meeting times. So we're watching that situation obviously very carefully. We had the article last week about the 82 or 83 other cities that are going to participate if rioting happens or if some kind of protest movement happens. So a lot of cities under the radar on that one. And there were a couple of incidents that happened Friday and over the weekend that is going to exacerbate this situation even more. And I won't get into that right now, but we will talk about that when we get into the national news. And there are some other pretty amazing headlines right now. If you go to redpillreports.com, every single day Rob does an awesome job of putting together an entire page just for the show. You can go and you can learn about the guests that we're going to have, and you can also then follow along with all of the news articles that are in the news that we're going to try and go over on the show today. So it's a good way for you to see just how short how much news there is given the short amount of time we have and how difficult it is to get to all of it. But some of the interesting headlines that you'll see on the page show, on the show page right now, dealing with the American news, there's a great article about 7 ways the military wastes our money. That is a very scandalous article right there. Also, indication now that more than 30,000 missing emails from IRS's Lois Lerner have been recovered. We'll talk about that quite a bit. In economic news, under the cover of darkness, the Dutch Central Bank has quietly brought back in 120 tons of gold from the U.S. to Amsterdam. That was a undercover of night repatriation of gold happening over the weekend. So that's what's happening also. So many things going on. Let's just go ahead. We'll hop into the national news right now. Because as I said, there are still things happening out here on this crazy rock as we tumble around the sun, if you believe that that motif. Anyway, another thing that happened under the cover of night, I must admit, Obama has now broadened the mission in Afghanistan, and he did this by doing things on Friday night when nobody was supposed to be paying attention, but it's a good thing that news like Red Pill Reports is on the ball. So U.S. troops in Afghanistan may once again engage Taliban fighters, not just Al-Qaeda terrorists, under new guidelines quietly approved by Barack Obama just this weekend. The armed forces were to limit their operation in Afghanistan to counterterrorism missions against Al-Qaeda after this year, until Barack Obama broadened the guidelines just this last week. The plan comes as U.S. combat mission in Afghanistan draws to a close, and thousands of troops return home, and the military prepares for a narrower counterterrorism and training mission over the next 2 years. But Barack's new decision also now means that the U.S. can conduct air support when needed, and one U.S. official said the military could only go after the Taliban if it posed a threat to American forces or provided direct support to Al-Qaeda, while the latter could be targeted more indiscriminately. And the Taliban's presence in Afghanistan far exceeds that of Al-Qaeda, adding significance to Obama's new authorization. The president's decision came in response to military requests from commanders who wanted troop levels to be allowed to continue to battle the Taliban, according to U.S. officials. And the decision to expand the military's authority does not impact the overall number of U.S. troops staying in Afghanistan. Earlier this year, Obama ordered the U.S. force presence to be reduced by to 9,800 by the end of this year, and a figure expected to be cut in half by the end of 2015. The president wants all U.S. troops to be out of Afghanistan a year later as his presidency draws to a close. Would be something nice for him to hang his hat on. I'll be very surprised if that actually happens. A U.S. drone destroyed a house in Matakil, which is a village in North Waziristan, on Friday, killing six people and wounding three others. None of the slain were identified, but all of them were labeled quote-unquote suspects. And if that story sounds awfully familiar, it is because it is. Today's attack, we're talking about Friday's attack, marks the 500th confirmed U.S. drone strike outside of actual war zones, with just about 10 years worth of strikes. And these strikes were extremely rare at first, a couple a year in Pakistan during the waning years of the Bush administration. But now the attacks are increasingly common, not just in Pakistan, but in Yemen as well. And the 500 attacks have killed some 3,674 people, while only 473 were listed as confirmed civilians. The vast majority of others slain have never been conclusively identified, remaining forever, quote-unquote, suspects. And the use of this suspects term as a catch-all for random slayed tribesmen has become increasingly common in recent years, with a number of people ever named at all now merely a handful of the hundreds slain every single year. So more bombs being dropped by drones in Pakistan and in Yemen. Good times. Happy to be a part of it all. Remember, we're paying for it. We are paying for it. Joe Biden had to retreat from an angry crowd in the Ukraine over the weekend. According to his Secret Service agents, they decided that the situation was not safe. Mr. Biden was supposed to meet with Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko at a site in central Kiev where demonstrators were killed earlier this year during the country's revolution. But his motorcade encountered a large and unruly crowd, many of whom were shouting shame at Mr. Poroshenko for failing to prosecute those responsible for the killings. According to a pool reporter traveling with Mr. Biden, the Secret Service decided it probably would not be a good idea for Mr. Biden to wade into the crowd. I wonder if the crowd there is aware that his son is now head of their largest national natural gas distributing company. Probably has something to do with that. And in a report coming from The Guardian today, they are saying that U.S. airstrikes in Syria are driving anti-Assad groups to support ISIS, which would be the worst case scenario in Syria if you have been following along with your home edition. The U.S. airstrikes in Syria are encouraging anti-regime fighters to forego alliances or even defect to Islamic State, according to a series of interviews conducted by The Guardian. Fighters from the Free Syrian Army, or the Fake Syrian Army, as some people like to call them, and the Islamic military groups are joining forces with ISIS, which has gained control of swaths of Syria and Iraq and has beheaded six Western hostages in the last few months. Some brigades have transferred their allegiance, while others are forming tactical alliances or truths. Support among civilians also appears to be growing in some areas as a result of resentment over the U.S.-led military actions. ISIS now is like a magnet that attracts large numbers of Muslims, and this is according to Abu Talia, who defected from the FSA a few months ago and is now in negotiation with other fighters from groups such as the Al-Nusra Front to do the same thing. Assam Murad, who is a fighter from the 600-strong dissident FSA brigade near Homs, says there is no way we would fight ISIS after the U.S. military campaign against them. A third man, Abu Zaid, who is the commander of an FSA brigade near Idlib, said a defector from President Bashar al-Assad's army said all the local hearers wonder why the U.S. coalition never came to rescue them from Assad's machine guns, but run to fight ISIS when it took a few pieces of land. We were in a robust fight against ISIS for confiscating our liberated areas, but now, if we are not in alliance, we are in a truce with them. These and other Syrian fighters told The Guardian in interviews by phone and over Skype that the U.S. campaign is turning the attitudes of Syrian opposition groups in favor of ISIS. Omar Walid, an FSA fighter in Hama, north of Damascus, said, "I am really scared that eventually most people will join ISIS out of their disappointment with the U.S. administration. just have a look on social media websites and you can see lots of people and leaders are turning to the side of ISIS. And they also go on to say that they did not receive any weapons from the U.S. to fight Bashar's regime for the last 3 years, and only now U.S. weapons are arriving to fight ISIS. So you can see why the people there who have been struggling against Bashar al-Assad's regime for years are very frustrated by the fact that they were not getting any support directly, and now all of a sudden that ISIS has shown up, here comes the cavalry. And I think that we will see that same situation continue to play out in Syria as more and more people start to really see what it is the United States is doing over there. some news out of Latin America in regard to Barack Obama's announcement of amnesty on Friday, or on Thursday night, Friday morning, I guess. Mexican President Nieto praised Barack Obama on Friday for his executive orders, granting new rights to millions of Americans, millions of people living illegally in the United States, calling it an act of justice. Mexicans are believed to account for more than half of the roughly 11.2 million migrants living in the United States without authorization, and Mexico has long pressed for better conditions for them. Nieto said in a speech that Obama's plan is an act of justice that recognizes the large contributions that millions of Mexicans have made to the development of our neighbor. And he says these measures represent relief for immigrants, especially Mexicans. He said those who will benefit are Mexican migrants who have been living in the United States for years in Honduras. President Hernandez issued a statement saying that the decision benefits Honduras and tens of thousands of families. The El Salvadorian president also came on board with the same type of quote. It's interesting that they are all saying, you know, of course, people who are coming to the country now are not going to be given any benefits from this program, but how are they going to distinguish? Are we going to then start sending the children home again after Biden goes down and says that we're going to essentially grant amnesty to all these people? Of course, the tidal wave is going to happen again. And of course, Latin America is super excited about it now because it's going to help their country quite a bit. While at the same time, Mexico is charging $28 to any American who wants to go into Mexico for 7 days. My goodness. Massive earthquake in Japan rattled the central portion of the country over the weekend. They have downgraded it to a 6.7, but there were several injuries and lots of destruction going on. So that happened in Japan. No good there. Not anywhere near Fukushima, so that is a blessing. But still our hearts and prayers go out to the people of Japan and anybody who is caught in a massive natural disaster like that. U.S. is warning citizens to avoid Acapulco right now. The U.S. Embassy in Mexico issued a security message Friday warning U.S. citizens to avoid the Pacific resort of Acapulco because of violence and protests. Demonstrators have blocked highways to Acapulco, hijacked buses, and blockaded the city's airport to demand the government find the students who disappeared September 26 in the nearby city of Iguala. Prosecutors say local police working for a drug gang probably turned the students over to gang members who may have killed them and burned their bodies. So, situation not getting calmer in Acapulco right now. And if you have seen some of the footage that is available on the internet from these protests, my goodness, ladies and gentlemen, these kids are not backing down from law enforcement. And I'll tell you what, I fully support what they're doing. I think if you're in a situation now where the elected officials are on record turning students over to drug gangs who kill them and burn their bodies, it's time to burn your city down. We're past the point of diplomacy at this point. And I'm not necessarily advocating violence, but I would advocate that all those police officers think deep thoughts about what it is that they're a part of there, because that's just disgusting. And how they would stand up now against other students who just want resolution is, again, disgusting. So stay out of Acapulco, everybody. That's what we're hearing. And in Iran, the nuclear deal was supposed to come to a conclusion today. It will not. They are looking at possibly extending the talks. I don't know what other solutions there could possibly be, but John Kerry is saying as late as yesterday that there are still serious gaps remaining between them and the Iranians when it comes to getting some resolution. They want to remove the sanctions from Tehran in some sort of agreement with Tehran that Tehran will stop pursuing nuclear armament, and that situation is still live, still going forward. I would imagine we'll see more indication today that that is going to be extended in terms of the talks there. So, moving into some national news, obviously Ferguson is high on everybody's list right now. We had the article last week about 82 American cities and one Canadian city all gearing up for joint protests when this happens. There was a lot of conjecture this weekend about whether or not the decision to indict Officer Darren Wilson would come down the pike, but it did not. And the latest indications are that there is still going to be some deliberation going on today, although we could very easily see a result from that today, too. So if you're in one of those cities or in a situation where you recognize that this could get bad, this is something you guys want to pay attention to. And then you almost wish that it had happened this weekend, because there were a couple of incidents now that is just adding fuel to the fire. Case in point, Cleveland, Ohio, the 12-year-old boy wielding what turned out to be a BB gun when he was shot by police outside of Cleveland Recreation Center died yesterday morning, unfortunately. The boy, whose name has not officially been released, was 12 years old, shot in the stomach at the Kudel Recreation Center at Detroit Avenue and West Boulevard at about 3:30 in the afternoon on Saturday. He was taken to the Metro Health Medical Center in very serious condition. And unfortunately, his condition deteriorated throughout the night, and he passed away on Sunday. The shooting came after a man at the park adjacent to the rec center called police with what he said, with a description of what he said was a guy with a gun pointing it at people. The caller actually twice said on the line that the gun was probably fake, and told dispatchers that the person pulling the gun from his waistband was also probably a juvenile. But the caller's doubts were never relayed to the responding officers. And one who was in his first year on the force, the other with at least a decade's worth of experience. The rookie officer saw the boy at a park bench pick up what looked like a gun and place it into his waistband. The officer ordered the boy to put his hands in the air, but instead the boy reached for the gun in his waistband. Deputy Chief Edward Tomba said the boy made no verbal threats to the officer, and there was not a physical confrontation, but the officer fired twice at the boy, hitting him in the stomach at least once. As with any shooting like this, the guy who shot the young man and his partner have both been placed on administrative leave during this investigation. So absolute tragedy going on again. Of course, it is, I hate to say it, but a white police officer and a black juvenile over the weekend. And, of course, right before Ferguson's, not good, not a good development. And then in another unbelievable development, lawmakers are ripping the New York Police Department after a frightened officer shoots and kills an unarmed Brooklyn man. And of course, white officer, black man, more ridiculousness. And I if you're so afraid to be in a bad neighborhood or a quote unquote bad neighborhood that you are not capable of actually doing your job as a law enforcement officer, you should not be a cop. I don't know how else to put that, but this guy, if you see somebody in a dark stairwell and it frightens you enough that you feel like you need to fire off a shot, you're not qualified to be a law enforcement officer, period. So anyway, this is what's happening in New York. Again, adding more fuel to the fire for this Ferguson situation. 28-year-old man in Brooklyn was walking down a stairwell with his girlfriend. The mayor de Blasio said on Friday that the death of Ake Gurley was a quote-unquote tragic mistake on part of the officer, who was identified as Peter Liang. Liang and his partner, both of whom have been on the force for less than 18 months, were patrolling the Louis H. Pink houses on Thursday when Gurley was shot. At the time, Gurley and his girlfriend, Melissa Butler, were walking down the stairwell from the 8th floor. Gurley collapsed on the 5th floor after being shot, so he fell down 3 flights of stairs as well, and law enforcement officers did not move to bring him medical attention. He was actually only given medical attention when his girlfriend called 911 after the law enforcement officers left, if you can believe it. They also say that the law enforcement officers did not identify themselves at any time. They made no commands or any kind of verbal contact with Gurley. So basically, they saw this gentleman walking with his girlfriend in a dark well, got frightened, because obviously, as a law enforcement officer, seeing people around you is incredibly frightening, and pulled out his weapon and shot him and killed this gentleman. So again, unarmed black man being shot by law enforcement, and it brings you back to the idea that this is not a black and white issue, you guys. It has nothing to do with black and white issues other than the fact that these situations keep developing, and that's the framework that they want us to look at it in. But this is about law enforcement training or lack thereof. This is about a lack of accountability for people who have weapons and believe that they have the authority to shoot you if you don't do what they say. And that is not a world in which I want to live. It's not a world I want to see anybody's children being raised. So this is the nature of the problem. And again, coming back to the idea of a national police offender registry, I cannot stress to you guys how important I think that idea is. It would work just like a sex offender registry. It would use shame. And any of these officers that are involved with a shooting or some kind of questionable management of their own selves, they go on this list, and they're not hired as a mall, you know, rent-a-cop. They're not hired in any, you know, type of law enforcement going forward. I think that would be one of the most influential things that we could do to get some of this situation resolved, to get these people off of these forces and get them into a profession where they aren't going to just snap and shoot somebody because they're afraid. That's just absolutely uncalled for. A new high school course has taken place in New York City. I love the idea of this. It's called Cops 101. The principal of the Eastside Community High School invited the New York Civil Liberties Union to give a two-day training session last week to instruct his high school kids on how to deal with police. And I love it because they actually did a lot of good here. They talked to them about when it was right to remain silent, how to file a complaint against police officers, when you have to show ID, all kinds of very important things. Wouldn't I like to see that spread across the nation? Boy, I can't tell you how much that would make me feel good. We'll get back 3 minutes, guys. This is your Daily Dose of Deprogramming, and we've got a little bit more national news to get to. We've got some crazy health news. What about the 6 most amazing health benefits of coffee? Yes, coffee, vindicated. Be right back, guys. 3 minutes.
So, you want the news and information without the hate, the hype, the fear. Well, you've come to the right place. You can support Truth Frequency Radio by spreading the word on social networking sites like Facebook, Twitter, or your favorite forums. Want to take Truth Frequency Radio on the road? Listen on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or other mobile devices. Want more than just the free stuff? Sign up for a VIP membership for as little as $4 a month and get super high-quality downloads, member-only content, and instant access to your favorite shows without the wait. It's only through your loving support that we're able to cover the cost and continue broadcasting. So now, stay tuned for more Free Speech Radio right here on the Truth Frequency Radio Network. KTFRN, worldwide.
Big business has discovered the preparedness market, and that makes it difficult to know where to go and who to trust. MyPatriotSupply.com is owned and operated by patriots just like you, has the best prices on storable food, non-GMO seeds, water filtration devices, home canning equipment, survival and self-reliance books, and more. MyPatriotSupply.com has old-fashioned values and the absolute best customer service in the industry. Look for the deal of the day, unique, affordable survival supplies that fit anyone's budget. Get same-day shipping on all orders and free shipping on orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927, 866-229-0927, or visit MyPatriotSupply.com for emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence. Shop with a name you know and a name you can trust. Before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Did you know there are 3 million edible food plants on Earth, and none have the nutritional value of the hemp plant? HempUSA.org offers you hemp protein powder. It does not contain chemicals or THC, is non-GMO, and is 100% gluten-free. Hemp protein powder burns fat, builds muscle, contains 53% protein, and feeds the body the nutrients it needs. Call 888-910-4367 and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at hemp. HeatherUSA.org. Wouldn't it be nice to have one product that replaces more than 10, saving you space, time, and money? HempUSA.org has a complete full-spectrum vitamin mineral detox formulation called Micro Plant Powder Gold. Micro Plant Powder Gold contains 101 vitamins, minerals, probiotics, and iodine, has a 100-year shelf life, and is a perfect addition to any storage shelter. Make Micro Plant Powder Gold your choice. Call 888-910-4367 or visit HempUSA.org today.
We hold these truths to be self-evident and that all men are created equal.
The Freedom Link
with Joe Joseph, Monday through Friday on True Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for sticking with us through that three-minute break. This is your daily dose of deep programming. My name is JD, and we are live, and we're excited to be so live. Cannot get enough of it. Want to mention again, Jamie Hanshaw will be joining us in about a half an hour to talk about mind control, the Project Monarch, all this crazy stuff that we're seeing coming out in pop culture nowadays with Katy Perry summoning Satan at the Grammys, things like that. Just ridiculous. And I want to also again recommend everyone check out her book Weird Stuff, which has got two parts out right now and a third part out coming, but it is essentially an encyclopedia of Illuminati symbolism, pop culture, social engineering, and the personal power of esoteric knowledge. So I'm very, very excited to be sharing Jamie Hanshaw's work with all of you later at the 11 o'clock hour. So do please stay tuned for that. And I want to get back into this story coming out of New York about this Cops 101 class that these this high school principal decided to put on, and jump back into this real quick to outline what exactly it was. It was a couple of hour-long workshops held in small classroom sessions during advisory periods, and it focused on the NYPD's stop and frisk program and how to exercise Fourth Amendment rights when being stopped and questioned in a car or at home. What's awesome about this is, of course, the pro-police department and the pro-police agenda coming back and saying that they really don't like this. They don't like the idea that these students are being taught what their rights are. And they're saying that this program is going beyond civics lessons and actually doling out criminal defense advice. And, of course, this is from a guy named Eugene O'Donnell, who is a former police officer and professor at John Jay College of Criminal Justice, says that the literature implies that police officers are in fact public enemy number one. He says it's unlikely that a high school student would come away with any other conclusion than that the police are a fearful group to be avoided at all costs. I'm sorry, any person who spends more than, I don't know, 15 minutes on YouTube will know without a shadow of a doubt that the law enforcement agencies in our country are in fact public enemy number one and that they should be avoided at all costs. So I love the fact that they're handing out real information. They're actually getting these kids geared up on their rights again. And isn't it funny how police officers don't want you to know what your rights are? How much you knowing what your rights are just really affects their ability to do their job, which is oppression anyway, because anyway, we can get into that at a later date. I'm sure we'll have Roger Sales on again, and we can talk about why law enforcement is not actually doing what it is they're supposed to be doing. But I digress. I want to move into Utah is reviving plans for executions by firing squad. That's right. 10 years after banning the use of firing squads in state executions, Utah lawmakers on Wednesday endorsed a proposal to allow the practice again to avoid problems with lethal injection drugs. And the proposal from Republican Representative Paul Ray of Clearfield would call for a firing squad if the state cannot obtain the lethal injection drugs 30 days before the scheduled execution. Utah dropped firing squads out of concern about the media attention, but Ray says it's the most humane way to execute someone because the inmate dies instantly, and after a 20-minute discussion, the interim panel of Utah lawmakers approved the idea on a 9-2 vote on Wednesday. And of course, the proposal still needs to go through the full legislative process once lawmakers convene for their annual sessions in January. But this proposal essentially hinges on the fact that Utah uses a three-drug combination to execute inmates, and European drug makers that supply those drugs to them have recently said that they're not going to supply them anymore because the European drug makers themselves have pretty substantial moral constraints against killing people, and they don't want to make drugs that are then turn around and used to kill people. So Utah is kind of under the gun to figure out some sort of solution, and it also stems from the fact that there's been several instances in the country in the last couple of years where death by lethal injection has not gone smoothly, and people have who are supposed to die quickly and humanely did not. So that's another reason that Utah is potentially going to reinstate the firing squad, which is, wow, crazy. A Saudi national who has spent the last 12 years detained at Guantanamo Bay has now been released, according to the Pentagon, on Saturday amid a push to whittle down the prison's population at the U.S. base in Cuba. Mohammed al-Zarini was sent to his homeland based on the conclusion of a U.S. government board that has been reevaluating the need to continue to hold some of the men as prisoners, according to the Pentagon in a statement. And he said he will take part in a Saudi program to rehabilitate militants. The board cleared him for release back in October, citing a number of factors, including his willingness to participate in said Saudi rehabilitation program, and he left Guantanamo on Friday. He's actually the 13th prisoner to leave Guantanamo Bay this year, and the 7th in just the last 2 weeks. Officials said they have more prisoners to be released in the coming weeks as part of a renewed effort to close the site, where 142 men are now being held, including 73, which are already cleared for release. So, will we see the promises of Barack Obama to close Gitmo actually happen? Who knows? Who knows? Difficult to say. 30,000 missing emails recovered from Miss Lois Lerner and at the IRS. Yeah, 30,000. And this, of course, happens 5 months after they were deemed lost forever. The U.S. Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration informed congressional staffers from several committees on Friday that the emails were found among hundreds of disaster recovery tapes that were used to back up the IRS email system. So, just like we've been saying forever and ever, just because your hard drive crashes doesn't actually do anything to your emails, and lo and behold, the IRS, like every other federal agency, actually has a law that says that anytime you get an email about anything, you got to print it out, put it in a file. So first and foremost, there's supposed to be hard copies of all these emails. Lois Lerner knows that. Everybody involved with this investigation knows that. They don't want to talk about it. But committees in the House and Senate are seeking the emails, which they believe could show Lerner was working in concert with the Obama administration officials to target conservative and Tea Party groups seeking tax-exempt status before the 2012 presidential election. These emails that were recently recovered extend from 2009 to 2011, a period when Lerner headed the IRS's Exempt Organizations Division. And the emails were lost when Lois Lerner's computer crashed. Ha ha, just kidding, because that's not really reality. And anybody who knows anything about computers knows that all those emails are stored in servers off-site and blah, blah, blah. So that's what's happening there with that. I don't know how long it will take for the people to go through 30,000 emails, but I would imagine that Lois Lerner's goose is probably cooked at this point. Cameras that read more than a quarter of a million license plates in Menlo Park net a single arrest. Three license plate readers in Menlo Park, and of course we're talking about San Jose here, began using this summer captured images of more than a quarter of a million license plates between July 1st and October 1st, according to the police report staff. Out of all of those images, only one could be tracked to a crime. So is that a good use of money, guys? We spent $57,914 on all of these, what are they called? License plate readers mounted on roofs and mounted on two patrol cars and one unmarked vehicle used by detectives. As I said, more than a quarter of a million license plates were photographed in the first 3 months, and of those, 141 plate numbers registered a hit, matching those of vehicles on an active want list as stolen or as associated with missing people. Only one of those actually turned out to be correct, and it was a stolen car, and they caught that guy. Is that worth $60,000 to supplement standard police work? I don't know. I don't know at all. Who knows? Okay, let's move into some economic news real quick because there is a lot of crazy stuff happening in the economy. Wouldn't know it to look at the markets right now. They are down about 8 points, so relatively flat in early trading. Gold is 40 cents below $1,200, sitting at $1,199.60. Coming up just a tiny bit. Gold leading the way for silver as usual. Also, silver up to about $16.48 an ounce right now, and crude oil also taking a little bit of a jump up to $76.94. So that is what's going on right now. A lot of people are very excited about the low gas right now, and a new report coming out is suggesting that there may be as many as 46.3 million people on the road this holiday season. So if you are going to be out, be safe. Add a little extra time. This is a 4.2% increase in the amount of people who are on the road, according to AAA, back in 2013. And most of these 46.3 million people are expected to drive at least 50 miles from their home. And they believe that that uptick, 4.2%, is related to the fact that gas prices are finally inexpensive enough for people to go out and enjoy themselves again. So I hope all of you, as I mentioned earlier, if you're not planning on being with me here, I hope you are planning on being surrounded by friends and family, and give thanks. Give thanks, guys. That is the secret to the world. The Dutch Central Bank quietly brings 120 tons of gold from the U.S. to Amsterdam. Okay, so the Dutch Central Bank secretly brought a large part of the national gold reserves being held in a secure depot in New York back to Amsterdam over the weekend. In total, 120 tons of gold valued at more than 4 billion euros has been brought back to the Netherlands by ship, according to a television report in the Netherlands. The high security reparations for the move took months, and the central bank decided to bring some of its gold reserves back to the Netherlands to ensure a better spread, according to the bank in a statement it released over the weekend. In addition, the bank hopes to boost consumer confidence by showing that there is enough gold in the Netherlands to take the country through another economic crisis should one ensue. And now 31% of the Dutch gold reserves are back at home in Amsterdam, which is the same percentage as they still have in New York. The rest is in Ottawa and London, and the Netherlands has 612 tons of gold worth currently about 19 billion euros, and that's what they have in their reserves right now. BitPay posted an interesting insight on their blog, reminding merchants and users to watch out for Bitcoin Black Friday. They're saying that the largest day of the year for Bitcoin purchases is going to be this Friday, taking place on the 28th of November, and BitPay wants to make sure that the merchants are prepared and have their sales listed on BitcoinBlackFriday.com. Last year, Bitcoin's Black Friday was the most popular day in the history of Bitcoin commerce, and they hope to see even more merchants join the Bitcoin community for this year's events. BitPay last year processed $6 million U.S. dollars for the Bitcoin Black Friday event in 2013, and that was before some of the biggest names in Black Friday e-commerce, like Newegg and Tiger Direct, started accepting Bitcoin. So just imagine what this year will be like. I am eager to spend my one penny's worth of Bitcoin, which is worth about $3.60 right now. So if anybody has a Christmas wish in the $3.60 range that I could, you know, get with Bitcoin, shoot me an email. You might just get lucky. You never know. The Swiss National Bank on Sunday repeated its opposition to a proposal that would force the central bank to boost its gold reserves with just a week to go until the Swiss vote on the issue. That vote is going to take place on the 30th of November, and it was called by a right-wing Swiss People's Party. It is aimed at preventing the SNB from offloading its gold holdings. It would also require the central bank to bring back gold parked abroad and to hold at least 20% of its assets in gold compared to the current holding, which is only 7.8%. Higher gold holdings could escalate costs for the SNB and impair its ability to intervene freely in the currency market, according to the chairman of the SNB. So we also see that public sentiment has dropped from about 44% in support of this bill down to about 38% last week. So what is going to happen? We don't know, but we will definitely keep an eye on the Swiss referendum, which will be on the 30th of November. My goodness. Okay. Also, OPEC hopping into the news this week. A lot of people are going to be preoccupied with turkey and pie this week, but anybody who is involved in the energy world is going to be very closely monitoring the OPEC's Thanksgiving Day meeting in Vienna, Austria. Oil prices have tumbled dramatically in recent weeks. Oil now trades below $80 a barrel, and most Americans can get gas for their cars for under $3 a gallon. The question is how OPEC is going to respond. So far, the energy-producing nations and companies have not scaled back production, even though it's pretty clear there is an oversupply of oil on the world market. And experts who follow OPEC and the oil market closely are fairly evenly split on their bets as to whether or not OPEC will vote to cut production. It will also almost certainly come down to Saudi Arabia, which has refused to scale back its own production because it wants to squeeze its regional nemesis, Iran, which is, of course, right now reeling from sanctions over its nuclear program in Tehran. So all eyes on OPEC. We'll see what they decide to do at the end of this week, and should be interesting. While people are not paying attention, we'll see what happens with oil prices. And in sort of economic news, the Brazilian President Rousseff has named a banker, Joaquim Levy, as her new finance minister. Leading three newspapers in Brazil reported on Friday, and of course this signals a shift towards a more market-friendly policies, and that also could breathe life into a stagnant economy, which is obviously more cheerleading for, you know, the normal party line of we're going to bring more central bankers into the fold of government. Interesting to see that the revolving door does not just exist in America, but also in many, many countries around the world. So that is what's happening in Brazil right now. Moving on to some tech news, we had an interesting discussion with Gary Milievsky the other day of Snoopwall, and one of the things that we were talking about was the ability for hackers or for, we'll say, nefarious corporations to get information from you. And one of the things that we kind of had broached upon was the idea that hackers or nefarious corporations we'll be trying to pull information out of your new smart cars. So we are going to have Gary on again in December, and we'll get more into that discussion about smart cars and the vulnerability. But there's a great article that has come out from News Factor this weekend talking about just this issue. And it's saying, you know, back in the day, car thieves used muscle and crowbars to wreak havoc on cars. But now the biggest threat is from keyboards and clicks. And automakers have launched an effort to improve coordination amongst themselves to combat hackers who are moving from computers and smartphones to increasingly tech-laden cars. And the future of transportation, clearly at this point, is all about connections to the internet, to other cars, and to other people in other cars, according to experts at the LA Auto Show. And connectivity is the key to an enabling a future with self-driving cars, among other advances in transportation. But this month, for example, security researchers in Israel said they were able to unlock doors and change the readings on the dashboard by exploiting a flaw in an aftermarket device connected to cars. That device that they exploited was called a Zubi, and it allows drivers to save information online about their current car's condition. And as automakers ramp up their defenses to hacking, they've been looking at multiple fronts. There's the car itself, the devices that users bring into a car, and online storage spaces where companies are storing data about the drivers, their driving, and their vehicles. So there is a lot of open resources for hackers to get information about you from your car. And again, one of these topics will be definitely on the forefront when Gary is back on the show in a couple of weeks. So if you have a smart car out there, probably something you ought to be paying attention to, just saying. Google's Project Loon, we talked about last week. They have this idea that they are going to send up high altitude weather balloons to beam 3G-like internet back to places in the world that don't have internet connectivity. And a new report coming out from Red Orbit right now is saying that they have made some major strides just in the last month. They are now able to keep the balloons up for 10 times longer than they were last year. Some of them able to remain airborne for over 100 days. And they're also saying now that they are able to launch up to 20 of these balloons at a time. So will Project Loon, you know, eventually develop into global internet? I think that's probably what's going to happen. I know Facebook is also working on developing a fleet of drones or satellites or airplanes designed to bring remote broadband access to remote parts of the world as well. So I think with companies like Facebook, Google, and Microsoft all throwing their hat in the ring, I think we'll see a development in this field relatively quickly, and Google obviously not lagging behind in that respect at all. Let's see, what else is going on? There's a great new product that is being released Thursday as an open source app for your phone called Detect, D-E-T-E-K-T. It was developed by a German company based security researcher, after discussions with human rights activists. It will be launched on Thursday in partnership with Amnesty International. And essentially what this app does is it allows you to look into your phone or your tablet or whatever and find out if any type of surveillance spyware is being used on that device, and it will allow you to become alerted to that without alerting the app that's doing the spying on you itself. So pretty cool development. Amnesty International working to help protesters around the world, definitely a good deal when it comes to that. Mozilla has now announced that they will be accepting Bitcoin donations, which is kind of interesting that they hadn't accepted Bitcoin donations before, but somebody challenged them on Reddit over the weekend, and so the owner, founder of Mozilla came back and said, here's the new button, guys. So now Mozilla joining the ranks of so many other companies out there who are now accepting Bitcoin, and those of us who use Firefox are very excited about that. So that will probably be another bolster to the Bitcoin arena. Let's talk about a little bit of health news right now. Probably the coolest article that I have seen in a while. 6 awesome health benefits of coffee. Yes, I am a coffeeholic, and when I saw this today, I thought, my goodness, there's a reason I'm so healthy. So coffee is a staple beverage for people around the world already, obviously, but it has gained a bad reputation in some circles with concerns over problems, including adrenaline failure and myths about stunted growth. But the truth is that coffee carries many health benefits. The difference between studies that report coffee to be beneficial and those who deem it harmful is the quality of the coffee. As a general rule to follow is that coffee beans are higher in quality than instant coffee, obviously, and fortunately coffee made from clean beans can offer numerous benefits. Protection against cancer is one of them. A study in the journal Gastroenterology found that consumption of 2 cups of coffee a day was associated with a 43% reduction in the risk of liver cancer. Additionally, a meta-analysis showed that coffee can reduce the risk of liver cancer by 50%, with the risk reductions being higher for men at 62%. Besides liver cancer, researchers have found that 4 or more cups of coffee a day can lower the risk of prostate cancer by nearly 60%. And further, if 5 cups per day can decrease breast cancer by 29% overall, and specifically the risk of estrogen receptor negative cancers dropped by 60% and postmenopausal cancer by 37%. How about a reduction in all-cause mortality? Yep, coffee can even reduce your chances of dying. A meta-analysis involving a total of 1 million people found that 4 cups of coffee a day reduced the all-cause mortality rate by 16%. While 3 cups of coffee a day lowered the cardiovascular disease mortality rate by 21%. My goodness. Less inflammation and maybe lower Alzheimer's risks. Among other coffee health benefits, research by the University of Illinois has found that caffeine can block brain-based inflammation implicated in many neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's. It also has the same effect as blocking the inflammatory chemical IL-1 by inhibiting the enzyme known as caspase 1, which triggers the production of blah, 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 and caffeine's ability to block receptors that help activate blah, 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 is associated with cognitive improvement and protection against Alzheimer's disease. Can also lead to less headaches, not more headaches. We know that withdrawal from caffeine can actually cause pretty bad headaches, but coffee itself may have the opposite effect when ingested in moderation, according to a study in the Journal of Headache and Pain has found that those drinking 2 or 3 cups of coffee each day experience the lowest incidence of chronic headaches. This is because caffeine helps prevent vascular spasms and helps to block pain receptors on nerve endings, acting much like a low-dose aspirin. And getting back to liver health, while coffee is often thought as something to detoxify from, a study of nearly 30,000 people found that at least 3 cups of coffee a day is associated with a reduction in abnormal liver enzymes. The effect was stronger with decaffeinated coffee on the enzymes ALT, with a 38% risk reduction instead of 25%, and AST with a 26% reduction as opposed to only 18%. Also, weight loss, they go on to say. That Dave Aspey, the author of The Bulletproof Diet, states that the polyphenols found in coffee are a prebiotic for the genus of gut flora, which are associated with weight control. Population of this type of bacteria cannot be increased with probiotics, making it necessary to feed the existing colonies. Furthermore, one of the antioxidants in coffee, which is chlorogenic acid, has the ability to help prevent weight gain and maintain normal blood sugar levels, thereby being protective against type 2 diabetes. However, adding copious amounts to your sugar can offset these benefits and is therefore not recommended, which is at which point I have to I crash and burn on that one, because I like a little sugar and creamer in my coffee. That's just the way it is. Just the way it is, guys. How about this other article? I love this, too. What does your sleep position say about you? How about, okay, so we're talking, you know, the breed of your dog, the face shape that you've got, your blood type. There's no shortage of random attributes that people can use to describe the inner you. Various researchers claim that Labrador owners are agreeable. People with wide faces are somewhat aggressive. And if you have type A blood, you are earnest and creative. And we all love to have our personality traits confirmed by external considerations. But as it turns out, our characters can even be assessed by the way that we arrange our bodies while we sleep. This report is very interesting. It's over at redpillreports.com right now under the show section. And you can also find it under the health section at redpillreports.com. But they actually show all these fantastic pictures, one of them being the fetus. You know, do you curl up on your side? They say that that position is adopted by 41% of the 1,000 participants who took the survey. And those who sleep in the fetus position are said to be tough on the outside but sensitive at heart. And while shy upon first encounters, they open up quickly. Some of this sleep positions that they outline here are actually pretty comical. I think mine is probably would be considered the free fall, which is essentially looks like chaos in bed. But go and check this thing out. We're going to come back after 3 minutes, guys, and we'll be joined by Jamie Hanshaw. We'll talk some mind control. But please go to redpillreports.com. Check out the daily section. Look at some of these news articles, because there is some fascinating stuff in the health department today. So we'll be back. 3 minutes. Jamie Hanshaw. Keep it right here, guys. Thanks for being here.
At Truth Frequency Radio, we bring you the very best personalities in the independent media without the corporate influence and with limited commercial interruption. Over the past year, Truth Frequency Radio has become one of the fastest growing media outlets in the world, and we owe it all to you. That's why, with every donation of $30 or more, we'll send you your very own Survive Drive as a way of saying thanks for your continued support. The Survive Drive is jam-packed with nearly 600 ebooks to help you survive everything from everyday life to major disasters. Donate today and we'll continue to wage war against the powers that shouldn't be. Again, thanks for your support and for making Truth Frequency Radio your choice for news without the hate, hype, and fear.
Hey, Big Mouth. Yeah, you. Listen, I want you to put the word out on the street. Tell your co-workers, your family, your paisanos, that my good friend, Joe Joseph, is doing a good thing here. He's sticking his neck out for me, for Sil, and for all the people in the world. Isn't that right, Sil?
He's part of the family now, Dee.
That's what I thought. So tune in to him right here on Freedom Link, Monday to Friday, exclusively on the Truth Frequency Radio. Yeah, they're watching you. Big deal. They're watching me, too. They're watching everybody. So grow some cojones and give them something to watch and listen to. Make them earn it. Give them paperwork until they choke. That's right. I know you won't let me down. So you're going to put the word out about my good friend, Joe Joseph, right? Good. Now do me a favor and get out of here.
Doctors don't want you to know about iodine because it allows the body to heal itself quickly and permanently. Iodine Now is a complete powder formulation that will load iodine into the body with vitamin C for the best possible absorption. Iodine Now, available by the case and for protection from radiation, fluoride, chlorine, and bromine, including all heavy metals. We believe that this is the main element that humans need more than any other at this time. This formulation is infused with our bioactive aerobic rare earth nutrient powder that has a powerful negative charge that attracts positive toxins. Why not buy one product that does the job of 20 and saves you space, time, and money? Has a storage life of 100 years. All for about $18 a month. Call 888-910-4367 or visit hempusa.org. Call 888-910-4367. 910-4367. Bringing back the universal medicine for mankind. Iodine Now. Only at MUSA.org.
This is Truth Frequency Radio.
The wicked ones, obviously under heavy Masonic influence.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. We are live, moving into the second hour of our live broadcast. Thank you guys again for being here for your daily dose of deprogramming. My name is JD, just like yesterday and just like it'll be tomorrow. Always my name. So right now, I have to tell you guys, I am super excited to be joined by the one and only Jamie Hanshaw. For those of you who don't know, Jamie is a second-generation conspiracy theorist, okay? She grew up in the 80s and the 90s, and she was exposed, like most of us, at a very early age to the growing world of truth seekers, alternative historians, the Clinton scandals, the FEMA activities, and the witchcraft that we've all seen in the Saturday morning cartoons. She was raised as a Christian in the church for 25 years and also taught Sunday school, so she's very knowledgeable about the Bible, the life of Jesus, Islam, Satanism, Mormonism, exorcism, and all the other isms that you can think of. And further studies include the occult activities of secret societies, the Freemasons, magic, sorcery, the Kabbalistic rituals, and the Hollywood trauma-based mind control. And Jamie, with co-writer Freeman, is compiling all of this information into a fully illustrated and well-referenced compendium of the occult mind pattern programming of Hollywood and the mainstream media in their new book, Weird Stuff, Operation Culture Creation. I got a chance to peruse that book yesterday, and I've got to say, first and foremost, Jamie, what an amazing collection of information and pictures that you have put together in this book. I guess I should say, first and foremost, Jamie, thank you very much for joining us on the Red Pill Reports today.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure. This is one of my very favorite topics when my producer Jeff told me that we were going to be talking about culture creation. Oh my gosh, my mind just lit up, because I don't think people necessarily, combine those two ideas in their minds. You know, mind control is one of those things that we all kind of know about, but the facet of it, which correlates to culture creation, I think is so important because so much of our culture is reinforced very subtly, by TV and by, the news and, you know, all the stuff that we read and see by, the religion organizations that we're all a part of. And then that subtle difference, I think, or that subtle agenda is just so important to understand. I love the fact that you chose that as the focus for your book. Would you mind, before we kind of delve into this idea of culture creation, just telling us a little bit more about yourself and your background and how it was that you became so invested in this fight against the creation of culture by these agendized evil people?
Sure. I was raised in a Christian family, and I like to think of my parents as true Christians because they didn't really get along with a lot of the mainstream churches. We had to leave a lot of churches. We were kicked out of a lot of churches just because our views were very left-wing. Not that they were unsupported, but, you know, churches a lot of times aren't very supportive of getting the conspiracy out because they're afraid of offending people, they're afraid of losing members. And so in this way, we feel a lot like we're alone in this battle against Satan, and we could really use the Christians' help, but they're just not willing to look into deeper into the conspiracy and farther than what their pastor will tell them, right? So, you know, my mom, she's a warrior. She's a truth seeker. She was iconoclast before there even was such a, you know, conspiracy movement. We were going to the Bible bookstore and renting VHS tapes on, like, you know, black helicopters and FEMA camps and Clinton scandals, you know, everything that happened back in the 90s. She was on top of it. She was on top of the, what we see now, the sex education in school where they take it way too far, right? Now they're teaching kids how to use strap-ons and right. anal sex and things like that. But so back in the 80s and 90s, she was, you know, on board meetings trying to protect schools and vote against these kind of things. So I just kind of, you know, watched her and took it from there. You know, when I met Freeman, that's when it all blossomed. Well, actually, when I read The Biggest Secret, it kind of put together all my Christian learning about the occult and then the other side, which just was like, you know, when you read David Icke, you're like, wow, this right. is a lot of information to take, but it actually makes sense when you come from the background that we come from.
Mm-hmm. Well, could you talk a little bit about the book, Weird Stuff? Uh-huh. What is it that that inspired you to write it, to get it all out, and what do you think is the most important takeaway for people? What is the one thing that people are really going to learn when they read this book?
Okay. Well, I wanted to make something that people could share with their friends, because the biggest complaint we get is like, I know all this stuff and I'm very awake and aware, but I have no one to talk to about it. Mm-hmm. My family doesn't believe me. My friends think I'm crazy. So I really wanted to write something that they could hand off that was very passive and wasn't called, you know, the Unified Grand Conspiracy or anything. It's just called Weird Stuff. And that actually has a special meaning for me, too, because I was in a relationship early on, and he was a Christian. He was much too kind-hearted to see the conspiracy. He was one of those people who were like, well, they wouldn't do that, right? Once you get deeper and deeper and find out what the elite actually practice and what they believe in and what they project on people, he just wouldn't believe that they could do that. And so I would spend all day, and I know a lot of conspiracy theorists go through this phase where they're just like a sponge, right? They're glued to their computer 24/7 trying to learn everything they can, put it all together, and, you know, it takes hours and hours and lots of times. And so he would come home and be like, what have you done all day? Just look at weird stuff. And you can't explain to someone who doesn't know what I've done. Well, I've, you know, been learning about Freemasons. I've been learning about OTO. I've been learning about Sirius, that, you know, whatever the weird topics are of the day that just blew your mind. And so it gets really lonely when you can't share your discoveries with other people. So that's why I really wanted to write this, that if you had someone who was on the fence and they didn't like to read a lot or just was unwelcoming of the information, I wanted to write something that you really couldn't argue with. You know, there is a lot of occult things in there, but it's all backed up by scientific discoveries, and there's really nothing in there that's a lot of conjecture. It's very provable. And I wanted to make something that was a lot like a tabloid magazine, because I think that those get passed around a lot, and I wanted my book to get passed around a lot too. Mm-hmm. And so I just really wrote it for people who can put it on their coffee table and let their friends and family pick it up at their own leisure and not be too scared of it. Because the one thing that I would want people to take away is that there's really nothing to fear about this information. And, you know, fear is where they want you to be at. And so one of our new slogans is wonder without fear. And so that's the point of my book. It's something that you can look and be like, well, that's weird, but I don't want to be too living in fear about this, because there's always things we can do.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad
it's not over yet.
Yeah, well, of course it's not. Well, they always say it's going to be okay in the end, so if it's not okay, then you know it's not the end. least that's the way I go with it. But I'm glad you brought it up in the framework of a spiritual battle, though, because a lot of people, when they talk about these mind control things, you know, we talk about the money powers, you know, the families that run the wealth and the power in the country, and that most of the wars that we see, the most of the strife that we see, you know, stems from this desire for power. But I think perhaps that you bringing up this idea of the occult influence is super duper important. And I'm wondering, how many different arenas have you been able to kind of identify the occult, you know, influence in this arena of culture creation?
Uh-huh. Well, almost everyone, right?
Right.
I mean, I could do this all day, point out how lots of things in culture go back to Thelema, first of all, and then, you know, deeper into Satanism and witchcraft. And, oh, what did you say? Oh, power. Okay, so here's the thing about power grabbing, is that when you find out what the elite practice and what they believe and how far this goes back, you know, all the way to ancient Babylon, you find out that this is actually a cycle of abuse, right? Because people are power grabbing, and then so they train their children to fear and abuse them, and they grow up and abuse other people. So the and even in witchcraft, you know, it's very hierarchical.
Mm-hmm.
So they're abused at the beginning until they grow up and become the abuser, and this is where their power comes from. So they're trying to escape this cycle of victimization, and power grab is the only way they can do it.
Mm-hmm. So how does the monarch programming come into this? Is that still a practice that's going on around the world today, or was that a flash in the pan kind of thing?
No, definitely, and I think it's even getting bigger and stronger. So the monarch program actually came into being after World War II, right? They brought in all the Nazi scientists to work together with the government against
USSR. Yep.
Yeah, Project Paperclip, okay? So then they created MKUltra, where they were doing all these experiments with LSD and drugs and psychotronic weapons and mind control experiments. And so that what grew out of this was the monarch program, where they actually married together these ancient bloodlines who are used to doing horrible things in secret and then putting on another face for the crowd, because this is what the queens do, this is what kings do, this is what politicians do. They're one person in private, and then they have to be their public persona. So they figured out early on that, you know, kids can't keep secrets like this. You can't be going out and teaching your children to, you know, sacrifice animals in the woods and then expect them not to talk about it. So they had to find a way that these people could be different people and not even remember the things that they had done. And so they brought this monarch project in, which was satanic general, generationally abused families. So people who had been doing the Satanism in secret for generations, they recruited them because they were more familiar with this disassociation, what I'm talking about being two different people, right? And so you see this in popular culture a lot, where they have the different personalities. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Oh, yeah, okay. I don't know if I answered your question.
Oh, yeah, you did, totally. Okay. I'm sorry, I was taking notes and thinking about... Well, one of the questions that comes to mind regarding the monarch programming is, is it still affecting kids now? I mean, is there still an ongoing process of you know, keeping these kids segregated and doing what it is? Like, what's the actual process that they use to create these, you know, split personalities in these kids?
Well, it all has to do with trauma, torture. So what they figured out was that you can stress the brain out so much that it thinks that, you know, it goes into a different, it makes different amnesic barriers between experiences. And so people who have been in this very heavily are constantly disassociating, switching into different personalities. One doesn't even remember what the other is doing. And this all starts, if they're generational, then they're pretty much tortured in the womb, and then they have a ritual birth, and then they have a satanic baptism, and they have, you know, they just begin it right when they're a fetus, basically, and torturing the mother tortures the baby, and it goes from there. So the rituals get more and more detailed and you know, the systems that they can create in a mind is just pretty, it's very amazing what the brain can do to protect itself from trauma. And I do think this is going on, and I think that we can almost prove it, you know, using the signs and symbols in popular culture. I think Vigilant Citizen has done a good job chronicling pretty much every video and personality that has these monarch symbols placed on them. And so we can't know for sure until they actually come out and say, yes, this has happened to me. I've grown up in this environment, and I'm ready to talk about it, because sometimes they can't even realize that it's happening to them because they don't even recall.
Right. Well, okay, so then for those of us who might suspect that somebody that we know was a victim of the monarch programming, are there any kind of telltale signs or things that you could look at in someone and say, I think that person might have been a subject of this program? Are there anything out, you know, that we could recognize from a distance?
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so I put up a article about Beyonce, and I just picked the top 10 signs of monarch programming, like really, really visible, obvious signs of monarch programming in popular culture.
Okay.
And the first one is obviously monarch butterflies, because that's how the scientists learned that you could pass information through your kids genetically. It's called genetic memory, right? And this is the ability to disassociate. If you want to get weirder and weirder, like down the David Icke trail, it's more closer to the reptilian entities. You know, their DNA has been wired to receive these type of demonic serpentine spirits that possess them.
Right.
So program it. If you see butterflies at all, and that's the first sign.
Why is that correlation there? What does the butterfly have to do with the ability to separate people's personalities? I guess I'm confused on that.
Because they were studying the monarch butterflies, and when they migrate, they take 3 generations to get to where they are and back.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Right, and so the children are migrating in the same path that their parents were without even knowing the way, and so they figured out this is how information can be passed on genetically.
So you're saying some of these victims then wear butterflies, like on their clothing and things like that, or when they're putting out albums? Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, you look at Katy Perry, her thing is covered in butterflies. You look at Miley Cyrus has a song about butterflies. So this also goes to the butterfly effect, right? Have you heard that? Which is chaos map, where one tiny cause can cause a great effect. Mm-hmm. And what they're doing right now, I think, is they're using all these program monarchs to traumatize and program humanity on a grand scale. So it's like what they're doing to one body, they want to do to entire population.
Ah, so it's like monarch programming 2.0 that we're seeing now.
Definitely, yeah. Okay. And so the second sign that I would say, if you were trying to, well, I'm looking at celebrities, people who, you know, can't really talk for themselves. We can talk about personal people. If you meet someone and you think they've gone through, we can talk a lot about later. But
okay.
In pop culture, I would say the second sign that you would look for is an alternate personality, right? So how many pop stars do you know who go by a different moniker, right? You've got
Prince, Bono.
Roman Polanski. You've got even back to David Bowie, you know, he was Ziggy Stardust.
Yep.
Eminem is Slim Shady. So, you know, that's the second red flag that I would say that you put on your list to, you know, try and decipher if these people, you think they've gone through the monarch programming or not.
Okay.
If you want me to, we can go through all 10 if you want.
I would love to. I would love to.
Okay, so the third one I would say is possession / satanic imagery. So this is where you get Beyonce saying, I can't perform without Sasha Fierce, right? So she has to be this alternate personality. This is Nicki Minaj, Roman Polanski. This is Miley Cyrus, Hannah Montana. And then the satanic imagery, like, you know, you have Katy Perry going on the VMAs doing this, you know, witchcraft ritual. You have Lady Gaga going on American Idol singing with a giant burning Lucifer while they're dripping blood.
Right.
you know, it's like, this is prime time.
Totally subtle. Totally
and
subtle.
It used to be satanic imagery was saved for, you know, very dark, heavy metal and grindcore and things like that. But now we're seeing it leak into just the bubblegum pop that everybody listens to on the radio.
Well, I'm wondering if that has to do with your, you know, this idea of the culture creation 2.0 that, you know, they've successfully created enough of these monarch people now, and now the goal is to get them out in front of people and to make it okay for Katy Perry to, you know, summon Satan at the VMA Awards or stuff like that.
Right.
Okay, number four. What's the number four flag?
Number four, I would say, would be beta kitten sexual programming.
What?
So this is the... This is when they create an alter who is just basically a sex slave, right?
Okay.
And so the very first person that they put out in the spotlight that I think was under Monarch Mind Control would be Marilyn Monroe.
Oh, okay.
And she was the first presidential model mind control slave, meaning she was up for, given to... JFK and his brother and, you know, God knows who else in Hollywood.
Right.
But this is destroying of their inhibitions that they learned in childhood about sexuality and just totally blowing those out of the water and programming them to be nothing but a sex slave. And so these monarchs are used for a lot more. They're used for currying information. They're used for drug trafficking. They're used for blackmail. They're used for, sex rituals. And so whenever you see a pop star in a kitten persona or with like feline type imagery, I have a picture on my article, Beyonce doing teeth with the leopard print all over her.
Wow. Okay.
So this is another marker of monarch programming. One of the big ones is beta kitten sexual programming.
Okay. Okay.
Yep. So number five, I would think, would be occult hand signs. So you see all these guys throwing up, you know, that hand sign where they just make a O with their index finger and their thumb and the other three fingers are up. I'm sure you can Google, you know, you can see all of the stars doing this, Madonna, Justin Bieber.
Mm-hmm.
So when you see them doing these occult hand signs, that's a big clue because these are very ancient. Right?
Okay.
And especially the one that they have marked as 666. I don't think that is actually 666. I think, well, I know for a fact that that's actually called the sign of the Vesica Pisces.
Are we talking about the okie dokie sign?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And so this is ancient, what they would use to say that you are in the secret society. You are in the womb of our society and under our protection.
Mm.
And so another sign they use is the triangle, you know, when they put their thumb and index fingers together with both hands and look through the triangle, okay? So everyone is like, this is a Illuminati pyramid. And, you know, maybe, but this is actually, magic is known as the triangle of manifestation. So you would use this as a focus for your will, and this has to go into Thelemic magic as well, but you make this triangle and you look through it and you focus on what you want. You can use it to put the moon's powers into a talisman. I mean, there's all sorts of uses that they have outlined for these hand symbols that are not just Pyramid of the Illuminati. And then another one I wanted to talk about was the peace sign, right? You see people using just the two-finger peace sign all the time.
Right.
And this is actually an occult hand sign that Aleister Crowley taught Winston Churchill during World War II because the Nazis were using the solar sign of the swastika.
Mm-hmm.
And so Churchill went to Crowley and said, what kind of sign can I use to defeat them? And so he gave them these two fingers as the sign of Typhon of the Abyss.
Wow, okay.
To battle the solar powers of the swastika. So whenever you see these two fingers, it's not peace. This is Typhon. And he is the dark lord of the abyss and Satan in a lot of religions.
Right. Wow, that is so fascinating. And it makes me want to ask you about Jim Carrey. This, mm-hmm. I think it was last week. Did you see him come on to, I don't know which, tonight?
Yeah.
You know, and he did the tongue thing.
Yeah.
Now, so what was that about? Now, is that him
coming? All mocking talking tongues. So this is so meta, isn't it?
Yeah.
And like I said before, these people wouldn't even hardly know that they were going through this because they've been disassociating their whole life. Mm-hmm. And so even if Jim Carrey was part of this, he wouldn't know unless he would actually go to a therapist, put all this stuff together, say, I was raised in this type of family. I remember this kind of ritual, which they almost never do. So he gets on and pretty much mocks all conspiracy theorists with his all-mocking tongue. Mm-hmm. And, this is just another...
Was it just a thumb in the face kind of thing? We're just like, we're here, we do it, we don't care what you think, and we're just going to make fun of it just to make it more...
On this level, I don't think he thinks that he is in the Illuminati. I think these people think that they're great people and they're doing the right thing.
Oh.
Because they all have handlers that tell them what to do and that can control them, that can put them in a different personality with the flip of a snap of a finger or a code word, or it's called a trigger. Right? So whatever they can use for a trigger, they can just put these people in another state of being. You can see this, I think it was a long time ago, Britney Spears went with Diane Sawyer and she starts crying and then she just has this like, whoa, Britney, and comes back a happy person. So you just saw her switching, alters, disassociating, coming back as a different person who can handle this type of responsibility.
Right. Wow. This is just amazing stuff. Amazing stuff, Jamie. Okay, let's move back into our list of things, if you could. I think we were at number six.
Number six, I would say, would be masks or bondage. Okay, so masks have this obvious reference to different people, different faces, different personalities. And then the bondage, you know, the S&M type stuff that we're seeing coming out with, like... Britney and Rihanna sing a song called S&M, where they're chained together. And so these people are actually slaves. And slavery is the biggest issue, I think, that we face today. You know, if you think slavery is dead, then that's crazy, because all these slave people are actually slaves.
And there's 36 million of them on the planet, according to a report that came out of India just last week. Mm-hmm.
And now they've turned the plantation global, basically, and they've... set it up so that we enslave ourselves. So, you know, here in America, we go to our crappy job that barely pays the rent, but then we have to have an iPhone 6. So you go out and spend your hard money on iPhone 6, which, you know, the minerals that they needed to mine that, they had to, you know, put the gorillas in a concentration camp in the Congo. I just watched this documentary about, you know, there's hardly any gorillas left because they've discovered oil in the Congo and they pretty much strip mined it, used for all the precious metals they needed to keep the technology going. Everybody needs a new iPhone every year, so we got to mine this stuff. We got to put the people in slavery to get it. You know, you got to buy a diamond ring for your princess program, fiance, which was, you know, mined out of the dirt by some guy in his underwear under a at the gunpoint.
Well, we've got to take a quick break here, Jamie. We're going to be back in 3 minutes. I want to get into some more of these indications of mind control victims and talk a little bit about pop culture as well. Keep it right here. 3 minute break.
So, you want the news and information without the hate, the hype, the fear? Well, you've come to the right place. You can support Truth Frequency Radio by spreading the word on social networking sites like Facebook, Twitter, or your favorite forums. Want to take Truth Frequency Radio on the road? Listen on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or other mobile devices. Want more than just the free stuff? Sign up for a VIP membership for as little as $4 a month and get super high-quality downloads, member-only content, and instant access to your favorite shows without the wait. It's only through your loving support that we're able to cover the cost and maintain you broadcasting. So now, stay tuned for more Free Speech Radio, right here on the Truth Frequency Radio Network. KTFRN, worldwide.
time and time again.
You need to come here and help us. We need assistance. Please.
Those we should be able to depend on let us down.
Federal and state and local officials saying help is on the way. Well, the folks here in Bell Harbor say show me.
Don't depend on the government to save you. Take action now so that you're prepared for the next disaster with MyPatriotSupply.com. Get the best prices on storable food, non-GMO seeds, water filtration devices, home canning equipment, survival and self-reliance books, and more at MyPatriotSupply.com. Call 866-229-0927.
We are hurting down here, and we need help immediately.
Before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Since our founding in 2005, we at YouTube have continually strived to bring you the best possible video experience on the internet. But now, we're updating YouTube to make it even better and give our users more of what they want. Introducing YouTube Plus, the new and improved version of YouTube. We're bringing a whole bunch of great new additions to YouTube. First of all, we're leveling the playing field by entirely removing subscriptions. You know how we've been phasing out subscriptions and making them less and less important by taking them off your home screen? Well, now subscriptions are non-existent. Everyone is equal. YouTubers that put in hours and hours of effort to make quality videos will be at the same level as 12-year-old Call of Duty gamers and video bloggers. Now you might be asking, how do I know what to watch now? Well, now your home screen is going to be filled with videos we think you'll like. Did you accidentally click on a My Little Pony video once? Well, now your home screen is going to be filled with videos just like that.
YouTube Plus. We owe 99% of the content creators.
Degrees of Insanity with Donnie Gilson.
Sunday on Truth Frequency Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. We are in our final segment of today's show, the last half an hour, as it were. We are joined by the one and only Miss Jamie Hanshaw today, and we are learning all about monarch programming and the creation of culture in terms of pop culture right now, I think is kind of where we are at. And we were talking, man, I'll tell you, this list, Jamie, that you have given us as far as indicators for how to tell if somebody has been monarch programmed or might potentially be a victim. This is amazing. I mean, honestly, a lot of the things that you have mentioned to me, the masks or the bondage, this beta kitten sexual fetish thing. I mean, these are some really substantial things. And I'll tell you, when you look around the pop culture players these days, these all stand out. I mean, they're really, really, really boldly standing out. We were kind of, I think, at about number 6, and you said you had about 4 more good indicators. Could we hop back into that?
Yeah, and I just wanted to mention, this isn't one of them that I wrote down, but disassociation, okay, what we talked about before. How many times in a video has the star of the video gone through the entire thing and then woken up like it was just a dream?
You mean like music videos or movies and things?
Yeah, so watch this. Next time you're watching, look for these indicators and look for how many times they start out in one persona. They go into the dream world, which is the bulk of the video, and then at the very end they wake up and it was all a dream.
Wow, okay. Okay.
Okay, so we said mass bondage, S&M. Okay, number 7 I would think would be, I just put multiplicity / broken mirror / hypnotic imagery. So multiplicity, again, is this idea of I am not one person, I am many people. Mm-hmm. And you see, example, Beyonce's Pepsi commercial in 2013 where she comes in and each mirror is a different version of her, right?
Yeah.
And in a lot of videos, you'll see that they split the person up into 2 people or 3 people. And you think this is just artistry, but this is a code that these people have been under mind control. So broken mirrors a lot comes up. You know, when you're watching videos, look for, they look in a mirror and then they break it because this represents the fragmentation of their mind, their personality. Mm-hmm. And then the hypnotic imagery, which would be like flashing lights, strobe lights, swirly black and white. You know that black and white swirl that's just kind of like an infinite swirl?
Yeah.
So Beyonce likes to use this a lot. And this actually, this is a straight from programming a child. And we have a friend named Jay Parker who was raised under the satanic ritual abuse. And we showed him this part in South Park where I don't know if you've seen this episode, but it's like the one where Chef goes with the Secret Adventure Club or Super Adventure Club. It's called The Return of Chef.
Okay.
And so it's about this club of men who travel around the world to have sex with little children to get their energy, basically. They have a funny name for it, like midichlorians or something. But they're telling you this is, like, actually true. And so the guy in the Super Adventure Club tries to hypnotize Chef with this little spinny hand spinner, and he goes, you know, you're under my control now. And Jay Parker, our friend who was a survivor of this, said, my dad had one of those.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, he said, my dad had one of those. He used it on us all the time when we were bad. He just turned the spinner on, say, look at this, and you know, disassociate into another.
Wow.
Round.
You just pegged my creepy meter. I mean, my creepy yeah. meter is now pegged, ladies.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so number 8, I would put Wizard of Oz. So this is a really weird one, because the Wizard of Oz is a perfect... what they want to do is blur the lines between fantasy and reality, and this is called confabulation. So you can't actually tell on your perpetrators because nobody would believe you. You know, so they purposely place things in the ritual that make no sense. You know, they would wear a Frankenstein mask or walk on a rope when the child is being tortured so that they could say the floating Frankenstein was torturing me and nobody would believe
okay.
them, right?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So The Wizard of Oz is actually a theosophical fairy tale, and it has a lot of occult undertones in it. Let me get my notes, because this is actually in my book, Weird Stuff 2.
I want to let everybody know, too, while we're waiting, Freeman TV is the freemantv.com is the website where you can go and you can learn more about Jamie and her husband, Freeman. And a fantastic website, all kinds of great articles, and you've got all of the Beyonce articles hosted there as well, correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so, you know, in the late 1940s, The Wizard of Oz was chosen to be the basis for the trauma-based programming. And one of the most important concepts that they tell the slaves is having them go, quote-unquote, over the rainbow. And this is, you know, disassociating into another personality.
Oh, wow.
And the Yellow Brick Road is a script that they have to follow no matter what scary thing lies ahead, right?
Okay.
And so, let's see.
You've also got that through the looking glass theme that is prevalent there, too.
Years again. And so Frank Baum, he was a member of the Theosophical Society, which influenced Hitler and Aleister Crowley. And he was supposedly inspired by, quote, some spirit who gave him the magic key to write the story of Wizard of Oz, which came out in 1900, right?
Yep.
And the word Oz is important to Selenic magicians. When you go into gematria, the Hebrew word Oz is spelled with Ayin and Zion, which adds up to 77. So Beyonce has this new, brand new video called 7-Eleven.
Wow, you're kidding.
No, and so I wrote this little paragraph in the book, and I wanted to put it in, even though it might be over some people's heads, you know, talking about gematria and Hebrew letters and all that. But what they think is that the number 77 represents magic acting on the world of matter and can be expressed as 11, which is the grand number of ritual magic, and 7 is the number of manifestation. So you get 7-11 right there.
Mm-hmm.
And also this goes to Oz because Crowley had a chapter called Liber Oz, which contains the basic creed of the Thelemites, which is there is no god but man and the slaves shall serve.
Wow.
Right. So whenever you see, you know, Dorothy programming, any type of... Okay, so they put these triggers in their lives all the time because they want the slave to be disassociated at all times and never know what's real and what's fantasy.
Okay.
And so let's say you were tortured and Wizard of Oz was one of your program or one of your triggers. How could you ever escape the imagery of that when it's so pervasive in popular culture.
Wow.
Whenever they see this, their mind wants to recall the trauma, but the brain won't let it. Mm-hmm. And so they're stuck in this, dissociative state. And so they want to keep them there at all times. And so this goes into Alice in Wonderland, too, which is number 9, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same as Wizard of Oz, fantasy land, what's reality, what is not. You said through the looking glass. And so this is actually a big one I put on here because the author of Alice in Wonderland, I mean, he's kind of the patron saint of pedophiles, and you just, because it's already dead, everybody who's associated with him is dead. But if you go back and look at the records, he was very, very creepy towards little children. He would take out this little girl named Alice Bledel, and this is where he said he got the ideas to write Alice in Wonderland, hanging out with this little girl. You read his letters that he wrote to children, you're like, creepy.
Right.
He would take them out and photograph them naked. He said, girls, I don't see why girls need to wear little clothes. I want to photograph them all naked. They found these pictures on his computer. Today he'd be registering with the sheriff downtown as a sex offender, right? But this is one of the most classic children's books that there is.
Wow, that is incredible.
And so number 10, we kind of talked a little bit about Marilyn Monroe a little bit, but Marilyn Monroe obsession and, Britney Spears won't go anywhere without her DVD collection of Marilyn Monroe movies. I have a picture here of Beyonce poses Marilyn Monroe. You can pretty much type in any of the big pop stars and they'll have them posed as Marilyn Monroe. Now I'm writing this new book and it's coming out really fast and it's just about celebrity mind control and I didn't really have a plan for it, but it just popped up. And so I made this, what I call a statistically impossible grid. And so if you don't think that this stuff is real, how would I be able to take Britney Spears, Beyonce, Katy Perry, Lady Gaga, Miley Cyrus, and Mariah Carey? These are just five of the first ones off the top of my head.
Mm-hmm.
And I picked five of the top 10 things I just explained to you. And I have images for every one. So I have Britney posed with a butterfly. I have Britney dressed as a kitty. I have Britney doing the hand sign. I have Britney in S&M. I have Britney as Marilyn Monroe.
Right.
I have Beyonce with a monarch butterfly on her eye, of all things,
Mm-hmm.
I have her as a sex kitten doing the hand sign. So each one of them, I put them in this, matrix, and they all have these signs on them. I have a picture here of Katy Perry dressed as Marilyn Monroe. I have Gaga. She says she channeled Marilyn Monroe for the photo shoot. The newest one, Miley, she's actually pretty nude as Marilyn Monroe. You can see her nipples through her shirt.
Yikes.
And Mariah Carey even owns Marilyn Monroe's piano. She identifies with her so much.
Wow. Okay, so that essentially says if you can look at anybody in pop culture and attribute at least five of these aspects to them, that you're almost guaranteed you're looking at a monarch programming victim.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find that it's more prevalent in women pop stars than men?
I do, mm-hmm. But there are also aspects of it that they need the men for, and I think Delta programming is a big one. So this is like spy programming. This is where they create a Bourne identity character, Jason Bourne, who is just a programmed super soldier. So how many of these Hollywood stars are masters in kung fu and martial arts, and how easy is it for them to travel internationally and go and have doors open for them where they wouldn't be otherwise? And so they use these people as assassins. They use them, like I said, as couriers and information. You can implant a message into somebody, make them forget, send them on their way to the person that they want to deliver the message to. The person on the other end has the trigger, they access the message, and then they wipe it clean. It's all very, very, very technical. And when you read Fritz Springmeier's Two Giant Tomes on monarch mind control,
mm-hmm.
It's like you got to put your thinking cap on because they put so much work into this, and it's so technical how they can structure a person's brain to be just basically a human computer.
When I just finished reading a book called Journey into Madness, which was talking about the CIA is trying to do, you know, psychic driving and the use of isolation chambers and things like that. And this is all going on back in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. And some of the things that they were doing back then were very frightening. And I can only imagine, you know, where we're at nowadays. I got a question that came to me via email. One of my friends out there, we were talking about the hand signals that all of these people are using. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the things that we are kind of, we believe here at Red Pill Reports is that obviously there is a collective consciousness that's going on, and the power of intention is very, very important. And so my friend wanted to know, in your opinion, what are the ramifications of the global populace starting to utilize those symbols, you know, and showing them to their friends and things like that? Or you know, what's the long-term result of that?
Mm-hmm. Well, like I said before, they're trying to take what they've figured out how to a single body and do it to an entire population. Mm-hmm. So if you have everybody agreeing with this, if you have everybody saying that this is fine, you know, we identify with the bondage, we identify with the sex programming, we identify with all these things, it's almost like giving them permission to continue.
Do you think they're going to push the boundary, though? I mean, have we seen? I mean, obviously, Katy Perry summoning Satan at the VMAs was, to me, a high watermark in the creepy meter scale. Do you think because they were able to do that and get away with it, that we'll see more extravagant, ridiculous? I mean, is Satan himself going to show up on a stage at some point?
Well, isn't she going to be at the Super Bowl now? So she's had her big coming out as a witch, and she even said, in an early interview, you know, I wanted to be a Christian star. I wanted to be like the next James Grant of music, but then I sold my soul to the devil, and now look, here I am. So speaking of Katy Perry, I just read an article about her in Rolling Stone, and it's the one where she's got green hair on the cover. Mm-hmm. And throughout the entire thing, she's crying, and she can't figure out why she's crying. So they show up for the interview, and she's on her treadmill, and she's bawling, and she's like, why am I crying? And so they follow her, you know, doing her daily things. And here's another thing about Katy Perry, which really stuck out to me and is proof that when you sell your soul to the devil, you are getting the bad end of the deal because he is a freaking slave driver.
Right.
Literally, taskmaster. I mean, her tour schedules are so intense. The only thing that she can do on a show day is try and repair her body from the night before and get it ready to do it all over again. And so this is another way they just keep them exhausted. They keep them working, and they say, this is what you want. This is what you have to do. Now that you have entered this level of success, you just keep go, 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 and never get a break. And I think this is what one of the things that led to her divorce with Russell Brand.
Oh, okay.
Is that they were always separated.
Do you think Russell Brand is involved? Because he seems like he is very, very smart. I'm on the fence about him.
Here's another thing, like when you ask me about Jim Carrey, I'm like, I don't think he purposely thinks I am part of the Illuminati and I'm here to deceive the world into the path of Satanism. No, he doesn't think that. Russell Brand doesn't think that. But the weird thing about him is that his logo for his show Brand X is the Mark of the Beast, which we've identified through the Typhonian tradition of magic. And there's this weird clip that you can watch him when Katy Perry on the red carpet, and she's starting to say something, and he flashes this little thing that says obey, this little hand, something in his hand, and then says obey.
Right.
And he just kind of switches altars.
Really?
I think he's doing his best, okay? I think they're all just doing what they think is right based on the information that they have. And which is, you know, not enough.
Right, right.
And if you're not talking about Monarch Program, I mean, I watched a 40-hour documentary on rock and roll and Satanism and rock and roll and Aleister Crowley and rock and roll.
Right.
It was really, really good. It was excellent, actually. But within those 40 hours, they never once mentioned the military. They never once mentioned MKUltra. They never once mentioned Monarch Programming. This is highly suspicious, and this is why I wouldn't follow people like Mark Dice.
Right.
Because he just says, you know, they're satanic sluts and blah, blah, blah. But he's not taking into account that they're actually victims of this trauma, and they don't really have a say over their own career. They don't have a say over what they're doing. They're being told what to do. They're being programmed what to do. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of the things that come out in their art, like you watch these videos sometimes now, especially Miley Cyrus, and you're like, what the heck are they thinking? Are they like on drugs? And which right. most people would just say, this is too bizarre. Why is this? And so this is part of their trauma programming coming out in their art, because art is therapy, right? And one of the first things when they're trying to heal them on our people is like, go paint, draw, write, keep a journal, anything you can to document your experiences. And so I think that this modern program is trickling out through their art program, or traumatizing people on one level and then getting them familiarized with the satanic imagery on the other level.
I think you're totally right. And that makes my brain want to ask the broader question of who are the handlers? Who are the corporate investors that are making this happen? Obviously, my brain goes to Disney right off the bat. What are Disney's correlation with all these people?
Okay, so let me say something about handlers. Like I said before, in this hierarchy of witchcraft, is you have to become the abuser to break the cycle of your own abuse. So once you come to this level, they train a slave to become a handler in the future. Does that make sense? So it's not someone who's like, I'm a bad guy and I'm going to just have all these slaves. They're part of it too. They're victim of it too. And they're trained to be handlers.
Okay. So does that what we're seeing then as, the Disney kids come and are growing up? Or, we're seeing them go from a transition between being victims to now where they're looking to victimize others?
Exactly.
Wow. So do we have any evidence or instances of people who have gone through that programming, making that switch, like these pop culture people who are now abusive?
Yeah, who I would say would be Jay-Z.
Right.
I think he was a little bit ahead of Beyonce in the whole hierarchy. He's friends with Warren Buffett. He has his hands in pretty much every giant financial deal going on. He's in bed with Barclays Bank of England through his stadium in Brooklyn. So I think he had to go through the trauma initiation, and then when he graduated, he, as a handler, he could then take on Beyonce and handle her.
Okay. Well, I want to come back to our discussion. We were talking about the instances that people can recognize in terms mm-hmm. of pop people, that they might be victims. But and one of the things about being in radio, especially with our brand of information, is we get approached by a lot of people just generally. And as a, one of the things you have to be aware of is that some of those people might not have your best interests at heart. Some of those people might be plants. Some of those people might be trying to give you information to make you look bad and things like that. So for people like us that are approached by people, all the time that want to either come on the show or share information, are there other things that we could recognize about them that maybe the pop culture kids aren't demonstrating that would also give mm-hmm. us an indication? And what might those be?
Well, if you knew a person who you think might be a victim of this in real life and they have no idea, I think the first question you should ask them is if they are missing time.
Okay.
If they sometimes are somewhere and they wake up and they're somewhere else, they don't know how they got there. Everyone else around them thinks that they're normal, but inside their mind, they're just missing time. They have no idea what happened. And there's a really good book about this called 22 Faces that I read that just totally stood out to me, that these people are super complex people. They're more than one person. And so these personalities grow up with the core personality, what they call, the first personality, the actual person. But as these personalities grow, they become real people too. Mm-hmm. So how do you separate, the one from the other? And it's almost like a death. It has to be integration in the future, but it's almost a death of this one person to make way for the core personality to come out.
Okay. Okay. So missing time would be one big thing.
Missing time. Military and the family.
Right.
Would be another red flag, because this is all done through military.
Mm-hmm. What about somebody coming from like an orphanage type background?
Yeah, definitely. I think that they use the rejection. They use the love that the child needs. And so they do this love bombing where they give it love and affection and then they take it away. And so that's a trauma.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Any other any other indicators that we could be looking for?
In a A person or a celebrity?
In a person, in a close friend or something like that.
Yeah, missing time, military in a family, a very controlling family. So, okay, so this all goes back to Babylon, right? And what they call Moriah is the name for the mind control program.
Okay.
And so this is really ancient, and these families have kept it secret for thousands of years, and they've infiltrated communities. They've placed their people who are actually, you know, Satan worshipers from birth, raised to be that way, and they put them as doctors, they put them as teachers, they put them as utility, so that they can have access to people without raising suspicion.
Okay, okay. So like your community leaders then, people, you know,
yeah.
Assistant principals of high schools and things like that.
Yeah.
Okay, okay. All right. Any other indicators that we should be on the on heightened alert about?
I guess hypersexuality and other mental issues. You know, if they're in therapy a lot, if they are having, you know, lots of mental problems, existential crisis, stuff like that, they might have these memories that they're trying to break through that they can't. And so a lot of therapists even don't believe. So there was even a movement in the 90s, and I wrote about this in Weird Stuff too, about them trying to get out their experiences of satanic ritual abuse in therapy, and the therapists don't believe them, and they actually had this committee that they put together, I can't remember the name of it right now. Oh, false memory syndrome.
Ah, okay.
So what they found was all these people were reporting the same type of activity and abuse from their childhood, you know, satanic rituals, hooded clubs, people, you know, the whole shebang, and then they would tell their therapist, and their therapist was like, well, you're false remembering. This is made up. This is, you know, too fantastical to believe. It has to be something else.
Right, right.
But what was really the nail in the coffin was, like, people from all walks of life and from all parts of the world were describing the same type of rituals. And so how is that possible if this was a localized thing or if they're making it up?
Right. Well, it would show to me that psychiatry and psychology are implicit in this agenda also then, which makes sense to me because it stands to reason that just about any industry that we've got now would have to be involved with all of this, you know.
Mm-hmm. You know, Sigmund Freud, I write a lot about him in Weird Stuff Part 1, how his nephew kind of was a big player in this culture creation, Edward Bernays. But Sigmund Freud kept coming across these people who were saying that they had gone through these satanic rituals as a child as well, and he just didn't believe them either.
Hmm.
And so he's kind of like the godfather of modern psychiatry, right?
Right.
He's a Kabbalist. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Great.
Oh, that's fantastic. Jamie, I can't thank you enough for joining us on the show. We're just about out of time today. I want to recommend everybody who wants to learn more about you to go to freemantv.com. And is there anything else that you want to leave us with, some closing thoughts there, Jamie?
Yeah, this is really scary stuff, but I think that we need to wonder without fear, and we need to look at the evidence without the blinders of our programmed responses. Everyone wants to think that they know how the world works, but they really don't.
I agree, and I'm hopeful that you'll join us again, maybe next month sometime.
Sure.
Awesome. Jamie, thanks again for being here on the Red Pill Reports today. Tomorrow, I want to let everybody know Al Adask will be our guest. We'll be talking about man and other animals and the important legal distinctions to be made and why they are so important. So do tune in tomorrow for that. Thank you guys for being here.
We drink thirst of vague words that are synonyms for progress and pair them with footage of a high-speed train. Science is doing lots of stuff that may or may not have anything to do with us. See how this guy in a lab coat holds up a beaker? That means we do research. But we also do business in the USA, or want you to think we do. Check out this wind energy thing in Indiana, and this blue-collar guy with dirt on his face. Lest you think we're a faceless entity, look at all these attractive people. Using a specific ratio of Asian people to black people to women to white men, we want to make sure we represent your needs and interests, or at least a version of your skin color in our ads. we put a baby in here? Yep,